your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Sormon Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
We're back on the races, about 5 minutes into hour two after a fun visit. The Dave Hill stops are always longer than I expect. I don't know. I think I budgeted 25 minutes or so, and it went, you know, went 45. You can't pull up because he's so much fun to listen to, and he's got such an interesting take on things. He loves the as he called it, the sporting life. And so does Marty McGee. And he joins us now from the Ville. Mart.
Bick, when I'm not at a track, I'm at a ball game or watching a ball game or doing something about sports. So, yeah, one day I'm going to grow up, Bick.
Yeah. Well, there's no rush. Because you know what? If you grow up, you're going to lose that boyish, those boyish good looks and charm.
Oh, come on, Bick. I'm turning red here.
I'm in good spirits. Won a race yesterday, so I got that post race win glow.
You're on the muscle, Bick.
Big time. Forget about it.
Who are you?
Well, I tell you what, horse players and race fans should be on the muscle because we got another big Saturday, Churchill Downs, and this is really. You know, this Foster Knight concept has really taken root.
It really has, and it puzzles me as to why the Foster, after having produced so many Breeders' Cup Classic winners and just good horses, was downgraded last fall from a Grade 2 to a Grade 1. And it's quite ironic because we've got a big field with a lot of good horses. There's a half a dozen horses in there, Bick, that qualify as Grade 1 horses, Seeking the Soul, Gift Box, Tenfold, Tom's Detat, Quip, Yoshida. I mean, there's six good horses in this race with another six. And, you know, I don't know how that sausage is made behind closed doors with the American Graded Stakes Committee. And I'm sure there's parameters and data and all that stuff that they put into a machine and it spits out what it's supposed to be. But, I mean, I bet the Churchill people are got their fingers crossed that a lot of these horses I mentioned go on to have a good second half of the year, and this race will be restored to grade one. It was a grade one from 2002 until last year. We even had the horse of the year Gunrunner win it 2 years ago. So anyway, there's two grade twos and three grade twos and two grade threes among the five consecutive stakes that run from races 5 through 9 tomorrow night. It starts at 8:03 with the Matt win, continues through the Wise Dan, which has an oversubscribed field of 14. Then a terrific running of the Florida Lee grade two that has three grade one winners in there. Then the Foster goes at 9:47 as race 8. And the Regret rounds it out with a field of 11 3-year-old turf fillies at 10:19. Of course, the NBCSN will have a 90-minute program that shows the Fleur-de-Lis and the Foster live. It runs from 8:30 to 10 Eastern, and it's going to be a full night of action.
I would say let's do it this way. I mean, look at the let's do the pick five, Mart, and we'll start with the Matt Wynn, and we'll work our way through. Let's get some analysis and some selections. What are you doing in the Matt Wynn?
Well, I mean, Mr. Money was so good in the Pat Day Mile. He's 2-1 on the morning line. I think he might be a little bit less than that. Nick's Go apparently isn't his old self from last year. He will set the pace. I guess Ben Colbrook's giving him one more shot to prove himself against graded company. But it looks like it'll be a legit pace with him in there, and Mr. Money comes and gets him. I talked briefly to Brett Calhoun earlier in the week, and he says the horse has done great since the Pat Day Mile. They came out of that race pointing for this race, and they'd like to maybe go after bigger fish after this.
You know, I thought the horse beyond Mr. Money, the horse that's got me intrigued is Nolo Contesto, because it feels like Sadler took a step back, you know, was trying to get him to the Triple Crown Trail, took the chance in the Santa Anita Derby, needed to do more than he did. And then I think he kind of decompressed and then, you know, started back forward. And it feels like now could be the time.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, he's a contender. Lyman Eyed off that Derby Day win is legit, you would think. And then Signal Man, who was really disappointing, I thought, in the Preakness, he's in there too. So it's a solid field of seven, really.
Nick's Go trying to rebuild his momentum from his two-year-old year before things kind of went sideways. Any conversations with Ben Colbrook?
No, I didn't. But, you know, he had him entered in some kind of allowance race that was on the grass. This was like a week or two ago. And he was an MTO in that race. So I guess that probably would have been his first go, but the race did not come off the grass, so he scratched. So I guess this was the alternate. And, you know, like I said, his form kind of speaks for himself, Stevie. He was really bad at Tampa this year and really, you know, he might have been one of those two-year-olds who just kind of flames out and settles into mediocrity, I guess.
You know who's progressive and who has increased his buyer with every single start is Proverb.
My man Moquette. Don't call him Moquette like I have for years. Moquette. Yeah, he's got Calvin, who's, you know, who remains immensely popular here. Not necessarily among the horsemen, but among the fans. And, yeah, this horse ran pretty good behind Laughing Fox at huge odds in the Oaklawn Invitational. Laughing Fox didn't come back and run that well, but Night Ops did. And so there you go. I guess he would be sitting right off the pace to be set by Nick's Go.
Well, solid field of seven with a variety of, you know, attributes to them, all with some stake and some extensive stake experience, including Signal Man, and that starts your pick five. And, you know, unless you're married to Mr. Money, you may have to spread it around a little bit. Let's go to the Wise Dan, the grade two. And on Monday, Mart, we had both Steve Asmussen and Mark Cassie break news in terms of horses that were going to enter, and that included Hot Springs for Steve Asmussen and March to the Arch for Mrs. Weber and Mark Cassie, and that really helped field kind of fill this field out, overflow.
Yeah, they've got 15. The only horse on the AEs is Parlor, who I always kind of like that horse for whatever reason. But a lot of these horses come out of the oddly run opening verse on the 30, and it was won by Seam Reap, the longest shot in the race when Jimmy Graham walked the dog out top. He's not going to get that same kind of pace scenario, I don't think, Steve. And I'm going to go with the horse who ran huge at Keeneland. That's the other Cassie, number 3, First Premio. I thought his win on the opening weekend of Keeneland was just terrific. Came over fast and accurate, who came back and jogged in his last start, and a couple of Chad horses. Bounced a little bit, didn't get the pace scenario that Brian Hernandez necessarily wanted in the opening burst. I think he's going to get a great trip. Obviously, this is a way wide open field that probably calls for spreading some if you're playing the multis, but my top pick is the Barry Irwin horse, number 3, First Premio.
First Premio, didn't miss by much in the opening verse. You mentioned CM Riep. How about, I suppose we should cover off the Invaders, and that includes Jeff Mullins. The waves of West Coast trainers coming east, Mart, and, you know, the 7-year-old veteran makes his seasonal debut in here. He's been a hard-trying and good-feeling horse for at least 3 years that I can remember.
Yeah, he's knocked out $1.2 million, Steve. And it seems, though, that off the layoff of, more than 9 months, and the fact that this horse really has been kind of a marathon turf horse, kind of speaks to them just maybe giving him one. Maybe he could. He is the class of the race, you would think, but it sure seems like he's in a difficult set of circumstances here going the mile and 16th off the layoff.
Holiday Stone makes the first start for Eddie Keneally. Has Eddie had horses for the Hills?
Yeah, he's had them for a while. Yeah, Eddie's had a great meet, by the way. He's second behind only Asmus, and then standing, he's 13 for 38. I have to look it up this morning. He won another race yesterday with a horse he claimed for himself and ran him right, jammed him right back for the 16. But very quietly, Eddie, who's, you know, you see him in the morning a lot because he's right between Mott and Baffert. So, like, it's he's that barn right in between them. So I was kidding him the other day. They have the they put the plaques up on the barns whenever you win a grade one race. And Eddie had his Braidster. That's the only plaque outside of his barn, his Braidster winner of the 2016 Stephen Foster. I said, Eddie, you're going to have to put a tarp over that like they put over the McCain ship like Trump did for that, because it's no longer a grade one. This does not apply anymore. So he didn't really like that much.
How about Chug, Inspector Lindley, who I've certainly have bet with alacrity.
That horse has run well at Tampa, it seems like. But, you know, and then he won at Aqueduct, and I watched him real close because I bet on him in the Dixie, and he didn't have anything, Steve. So, yeah, Shook came out of the Tampa race saying he was going to run in the Makers, and instead he ran in the Munis, and then he went back and won at Aqueduct. But he's in with a chance. You know, he's got Jose Ortiz on him, who's – you got all these guys coming in tomorrow night. You got Castellani, you got Johnny B, you got Jose Ortiz, you know, joining the regular crew, the Gaffleones and the Giroux. You got Rosario coming in off his big Belmont win, too. So, and he rides a horse in with a chance, a horse who was flying late in the Dixie in admission office for Brian Lynch. And, you know, again, this is I'm going with the 3 horse in here, but I the more we look at it, the more I think I'm going to have to spread out if I'm going to stay alive in my pick 5.
That gets us to the Fleur-de-Lis. And, you know, she's a Julie, I suppose, is sort of the now filly, and Elate, you know, honestly, she's got questions to answer, does she not?
She does. She hasn't won since the Delaware Handicap last year. She was really regarded among the elite. But, yeah, look at who she got beat by in her last three starts. She got beat by Abel Tasman in that controversial running of the personal ensign. And then she ran up against Midnight Bisou twice and ran with her in the Azaria. Got beat, you know, almost three lengths by her in the Apple Blossom. But she's training right along here at Churchill for Kenny McCarthy, Mott's assistant. And every time I've asked him about her, he says she's doing great. So I'm sure that the Claiborne people and Ms. Bill Schneider would like to see her turn things around the second half of the year. She's the kind of horse, if she were to go ahead and win out the rest of the year, she'd be right there in the divisional honors mentions.
Well, in addition, you've got Nacho Correas with Blue Prize, and she kind of ran evenly in the seasonal debut, the now 6-year-old Pure Prize mare in the La Troyenne. I mean, didn't run badly, didn't run overly competitively either. What was your impression? Did she kind of run like she needed one?
Yeah, she ran like she needed one. She's sick now. I remember John Hennig years ago. I said, how come so-and-so isn't running as, I think her name was Megan's Bluff. I said, why isn't she running as good now? He says she has that disease. I said, what's that? He said, 6-year-old mare disease. maybe she's not what she used to be, but I know that she probably stands to step up off of that race. She's going to be tough. She's got Castellano up for the first time. Right alongside of her is my rooting interest, the JMS filly trained by my brother. Go Google yourself. I know she's in a tough spot, but she's the type of filly who Paul wouldn't run her in this spot unless she was doing great. I hadn't really asked him about her, but I'm sure she's doing real good.
Well, let's get to the Foster and the big feature. The regret's nice too, but obviously the night's big focus is this mile and an eighth standard that really has produced a nice list of winners.
Yeah, it has. And by the way, all the multis, the late pick four, the pick five, and even the single six, all end with a regret. So you got a 4-9 single six, you got a 5-9 pick five, and you got a 6-9 pick four. And they did that so as to avoid including the Arabian race, which is race 10 on the card. So, I thought in this race, Steve, that, like I mentioned, there's a half dozen horses who are really legit. I thought Tenfold would not be 12-1 on as they've got him listed on the morning line. I thought that Pimlico special win was just really good, really well done by Santana and Steve. And I'm sure Steve mentioned he would not have entered him in this race unless he came out of that race in peak shape, because he's going to need it. Gift Box has been, you know, when you match strides with McKenzie and beat McKenzie, you've done a lot. I've just been overly impressed with McKenzie this year. So I think it's between those two, Tenfold and Gift Box. There's not a whole lot of pace in there, and that's probably cause for Al Stahl to go ahead and instruct Sean Bridgmahan to send the 9-horse Tom's Day Tot, maybe Danny Pies's horse, Alcatom, will be on the lead too. But there's not a huge amount of pace in here, you don't think. And with Gift Box and right behind them and Tenfold right behind them. So, obviously you got to get a trip to win this kind of race. And I'm going to go with Tenfold over Gift Box with Tom's Day Tot third.
Tenfold, Gift Box, Tom's Day Tot.
What you got?
I don't know. Seeking the Soul, I've got a little interest in. Certainly underneath the. As for a piece, maybe. What about Yoshida? What's wrong with Yoshida?
Well, Yoshida, I think that the mile and an eighth and. I mean, he might be the best horse in the race, but I think the mile and eighth might be a touch short for him. And he's coming off that the Dubai race. I thought the Dallas running back Seeking the Soul in just 5 weeks off Dubai, that a lot of guys don't do it like that. They do it more like Mott's doing. They wait the longer time. But, these horses are all good. Quip, too, he's the other one. He ran huge at Oaklawn. And Rudy keeps saying that he's glad that he gave him as much time as he did after that debacle of a Preakness last year. And he's come back running. So, that's the half dozen horses who all are in with a fighting chance.
He's got to improve to compete with the biggest names in here. And you know who's got an interesting look about him, just because he's going to save ground every step. He's got one of my favorite hustling jocks out there. Thirst for Life, Wes Hawley. That horse is going to be completely overlooked. He's going to be, you know, double digits as usual in this, you know, kind of a setting, and he could be third or fourth.
He would blow up some supers.
Well, and I would keep an eye. Didn't Mena won this on?
Oh, God,
Poolland, right?
Cassie, wasn't it? Was it for Cassie?
Was it Cassie?
Cassie, I want to say maybe Neil Howard or Cassie. Yeah.
No, it wasn't Neil Howard.
It was like 38-1, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and that was tremendous. Wasn't it? What about that assist that the former was he the was that the former Nick Zito assistant?
Gosh, I don't know.
There was what's it? I'm trying to think of who this I'm thinking of. I thought that there was some. I'm going to have to look this up now. Now you got me bugged. All right, I'm bugging myself because I'm the one that blundered into
Pool
it.
Poolland. I'll look him up here.
Good. Yeah, it's definitely Poolland. Let's go to the regret. Close out the pick five and the all stakes pick five and the all stakes pick four.
This is Winter Sunset is the only horse really to run competitively in graded stakes, and the fact that she ran a good third behind Concrete Rose, who, by the way, works Sunday toward the Belmont Oaks. She's really on a steady work pattern for Rusty Arnold toward the July 6th Belmont Oaks. The fact she ran so well behind her and Newspaper Record, and she's well drawn on the rail. She's the 7-2 morning line favorite, Steve. I think she's more like 2-1 in there, and she will be. I'm tempted to single on her on the on all my multis because Catalano's really high on her. There's not another, you know, graded, tested, or proven filly in here. So I know that, you know, again, when Leora got hurt last month, and Wayne made mention of at least I've still got another really good 3-year-old filly in the barn, and that's her. And obviously she's from one of those elite Darby Dan families, so she's got a lot going for her.
So Winter Sunset for you, no interest in.
Well, I thought that Hungry Kitten ran just.
Yeah, I liked her. I liked her. Yep.
Breaking her maiden and yep. Catching Danny Gargan horse on the wire here. Poolland, I've got somebody. No, it's somebody. We got the wrong horse named here. Poolland was a filly. Yeah.
Okay. It was Pool something.
Yeah. You're thinking of Tim Pool is what you're thinking of.
No, well, Tim Pool's the assistant, but longtime Zito assistant. No, it was – I can see his golf cart, the black and red and white golf cart. It's so funny. I don't know why I'm – Wait a minute. John Nichols is sending a message.
Okay.
He's okay. Making fun of Pool, us again. Pool play.
He calls it kind of a nasty name. Yeah. Pool play.
Yeah. This is twice now in recent weeks that John has made fun of us, and
and why wouldn't you? Because
why wouldn't you? And exactly.
All right,
that's great.
Is that it?
I don't know. You tell me. And it was Cassie. It was Cassie.
Yeah. There you go. Never heard from again. There's been a few of those in the Foster. We had that horse of Moquette who won. I remember it was in 05 because my brother-in-law was.
That's who I'm thinking of, actually. That's who I'm thinking of.
You're thinking of Gold something. It is. John.
Yeah.
Texas. That horse, he was like 71. No, he's 91-1.
Yeah.
For Moquette. And I remember it was one of the hottest days ever in the history of Churchill Downs. My brother-in-law, Ron Ellis, he was the trainer then of Buzzards Bay, and he came in and he was like even money, and he like melted. And Calvin won the race on the horse of Gold something. He paid $180 something dollars.
Seek gold. Seek gold. Yes, seek gold.
Not seeking the gold.
No. And that's who I'm thinking of, actually, as the trainer side. It was Moquette that I was thinking of.
Okay.
It was his golf cart. And that was my... That was our first. That was my first exposure to him at all. To who Moquette was.
All right, Bick.
What else you got? Come on, you got to have something else.
Ellis Park starts on June 30th. So I can't remember them going the next. I actually remember them overlapping, 15 years ago or so with Churchill when they were kind of fighting. But Churchill ends on a Saturday, June 29th, and Ellis Park starts on June 30th, and they're going to average like 330,000 a day. A lot of these guys are staying home with their horses instead of going elsewhere. It's really been like the lure for them to stick around. So,
Yeah, and John again is filling in all the blanks for us, Mart. He is acknowledging it, between Moquette, and it was a horse that was in fact a castaway. That a cast off of Zito's that Ron had. Remember when Moquette was starting, he got like the retreads that were coming off of out of Nick's barn.
Yeah, that started him off in decent fashion. Really, look what he's
very much, very much. Well, thank God that John's listening, because otherwise we'd be blind without a cane.
You guys have a great day.
I guess you're getting off, huh? You're leaving?
Yeah.
All right. DRF McGee, everybody. Always a treat. Let's take a bottom of the hour break. We got to get Nick in here. Nick Tamaro, not Nick Zito. You had Nick Zito last Friday. That should hold you for a while. Plus, you got Satish, who was was doing the Al Swearingen last Friday. So we got Nick. I got to figure this out. I can't keep Nick on hold the entire rest of the morning. But we've also got DeRosa to slip in here. Maybe we should get a quick hit in with DeRosa and then Nick. I'll see if that's okay with Nick Tamaro and then Rick Hammerly and Nick Luck. So you got a pair of Nicks. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. 10:30, a little past, so 90 minutes to come. Watching at OBS and 7:48, as we mentioned, the Into Mischief. And boy, she's a big, long-bodied thing. Ooh, does this look like a nice two-turn filly? And tall and, wow, holy cow. We're going to keep an eye on this. Ed DeRosa joining us, and... good morning.
Good morning. Happy post Triple Crown.
Absolutely. And pre Foster. They're already at 50,000 on this one. 100,000. Wow. This is going to be the sale topper. So we'll 200 now. Bing, bang, bong. Ed.
Smells like Stone Street.
Maybe. 250 now. And, let's 300 now, and I think 450 is your was your day one. 445 is your sale leader right now. So if it gets past there, we're at 375 now on this big, good-looking Royton full sister, and she's also got a nice demeanor. And you can really tell, you know, when there's the hooing and haing and, you know, their ears, you know, or they're standing, they're watching, they're interested and inquisitive. 475 now, so you do have a sale topper, as Tom Ventura this morning, 500,000.
Is this DT bidding on the phone right now?
This is not. Did you hear that the other day?
No.
We did that on Wednesday.
Yeah. No, yeah.
We did that on Wednesday to land that data link gelding hip number 19. And we do have an interest in a couple of horses here today. 600,000 now, and they're still going. 620, now it's going to slow down a little. 6.25, 655, well, not slowing down. 675. Here, let me turn a little volume on. Here we go.
Against us, 775. 800, please. 800. I'm watching you, too. 800. 850. 850. Get my way. 850. 850. 8. You know where we're headed. 850. That's what they call us. 850. 850. 859. 859. 850. You never think I'm going to do 50. You never think I'm where. 859. 859. 850. Want to do it, Marco? 859. 850. You never think I'm going to do 850. 850. One of the 9. 859. 859. 875. I'll do that. Now 9, please. 875. 900. 900. You never think I'm going to do 875. One of the 900. 875. 925. At 999.
925. They want to get this to a million.
Anybody else want to play? I guess we should ask everybody. 925. All done. 900,000. You're never going to 25. You good? 925. 900. And I have. Boom, Stacy. 900,000. Well done. Thank you. Good luck.
There you go. Rowayton's full sister will top this sale, $900,000, and we'll watch for some indication of who is taking this very, she's a big, good-looking filly, home. Ed DeRosa, you had a nice week in, I didn't see you Belmont Day, actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah, not Belmont Day. I saw the day before, but. Yes, I posted on the Twitters as my best Triple Crown season gambling since I've kept track of every bet. So felt good about that. I felt like this was the year I kind of turned a corner on not necessarily needing my top pick to win to do well, but just trying to make the most of my overall opinions on the race. And hopefully we'll learn from the success and have a good second half of the year.
What changes for you once we get through the Triple Crown racing portion of the year?
The Breeders' Cup focus, although, admittedly, with all the divisions, and it's as tough to take a similar approach to the Breeders' Cup as we do with the Triple Crown. I think it's a lot more meat-centric now. Saratoga, definitely the big one. But, I'm embarrassed to say I have yet to make a wager on Arlington Park yet. And just now that the Triple Crown's over, I definitely feel like there's going to be more opportunity to pay attention to what's going on there. And I haven't missed much turf racing from what I've read from Marcus and Noel. So just going to kind of to jump in there and support the home team. Summer racing, I'd say more about enjoying the meets and just the excitement of being at some of our world class venues throughout the summer versus focus on one division.
Let's get some thoughts then. Let's dive in. What are we doing this weekend?
Yeah, well, Stephen Foster, looking forward to final night racing card of the year. I'll say, as I've said on all of these I've done talking about the race, I'm shocked it's a grade two. It's not a cut I would have made in the stakes schedule. I feel like some of these races should be, they're patterns. That's what was modeled after the European pattern system. And the fact that there's no two-turn dirt grade one race between the Big Cap and the Whitney, it's just a huge hole in the calendar. And I don't see why they wouldn't have wanted that filled by the Stephen Foster. So hopefully with this field of 12 and some interesting horses, can get it back up to where I felt it belongs anyway, but others think it needs to earn it. So we'll see what happens. But it's a good group with 12, and it's the penultimate leg of the All-Stakes Pick 5 at Churchill. So I went with Tom Zaytat on top, basically between him and Seeking the Soul, but I just thought Seeking the Soul might have a little too much to do. Yeah, there's 12 horses in here, but there's just not a ton of speed. I mean, Tom Zaytat and Gift Box, I guess, will be on the front end, and neither is, I'd say Tom Zaytat probably a little more likely to set the pace than Gift Box. But, I mean, other than those two, I just don't see this being blistering. And with 12 horses, there might be some traffic for Seeking the Soul and Yoshida, for that matter. So I like Tom Zaytat on top, and I give Runaway Ghost a look at a big price. Steve, he has a couple of Brisnet numbers that would be competitive. Has to run back to him, but you're getting 20-1. And kudos to Ben or Mr. Bork or whoever, but to get these horses to ship in here, make for a compelling field. So looking forward to it, but going with Tom Zaytat on top for Elstall.
Well, and just had Marty on, and he's got Tom Zaytat underneath. He's certainly one of the, one of the options that isn't, one of the two favorites or three even, because Seeking the Soul's 4-1.
Yeah,
that was aggressive. Is that Joe's line?
No, it's still Mike. And I haven't. I can only speak to Brisnet, which obviously I find valuable, but realize there are many other numbers that have a chance of moving the pool. He's pretty steady in the triple digit range, just pretty rare in the division, and he's one of only a few in the race. So I'm eager to see what Thoroughgraph and Timeform and Rag is gonna have to say as far as how fast he may or may not be, because on Brisnet, I can kind of maybe see 4-1, but in a 12-horse field with two obvious horses taking money, I kind of agree with you. It just seems like he can't get to that $10 level. He almost has to be 9-2 or 5-1.
That's what I thought, but all right. If you're going to get that instead, if you're going to get that 9-2 or 5-1 on Tom Zaytat, that works.
Yeah, no, and we're hoping. Yeah, and I do think he'll be the fourth choice. So, I mean, just from a math standpoint, I think maybe we can be in good shape.
All right, what else?
So the all stakes pick five kicks off with the Matt Wynn, and I see that as the most likely winner. I'm gonna trust the form that we saw Hog Creek Hustle show in the Woody Stevens with Mr. Money, scintillating Pat Day, and even on that day there was, you know, talk of maybe he should have been the one in the Derby from Brett's barn, and obviously he wouldn't have had the points to get in anyway, but you know, something turned around from that Louisiana Derby, which has been productive in its own right. And I just don't think anyone else in this race has shown that type of ability that we saw in the Pat Day Mile that appeared to be supported by what Hog Creek Hustle did. So Mr. Money for me to kick off the pick five. And, you know, I'm just going to take my chances that I can get through him and hopefully get the spread elsewhere because the Wise Dan, which is next. There are certainly no gimmies in the 14-horse field, and I haven't landed on a top pick yet, and I wish you wouldn't have gotten post 14, but Bourbon Resolution for Ian Wilkes I think is really interesting. The Miles should suit New Year's Day. The Dam, her other fold, The Race, has a win on turf, and Ian Wilkes has said that, you know, this horse's turf workout told them that maybe they've been on the wrong surface all along, and in a 10 race career, that's sort of saying something for a horse who's already a grade three winner. So don't love the far outside going a mile at Churchill, but definitely I think is worth even still worth 10-1.
Yeah, the pedigree question, you know, certainly has to be answered. You know, after that it's a lot of the obvious players. The John Ortiz intrigued me a little bit at a monster price.
All right. No. Yeah, three back at Fairgrounds. He popped a big number, and not sure. Oh, the race was at Monmouth. That explains that. I'm not sure where Adam was on Derby Day, but yeah, they tried the stakes at Monmouth. But Biscuit gets back aboard and draws inside with some pace. 30-1 is, you'd be foolish to try to talk anyone off that horse.
It's just he's, you know, he's competitive. He's
right,
and he's got some decent efforts. You go back to when Kellen Gorder had him at Churchill, and he got different kinds of turf. And what are we looking at in that regard, by the way, weather wise and turf wise, all that?
Looking, a chance of rain, but. You know, it seems that time of year it's been cooler than normal, so it just seems like we're in that phase where rain can blow in at any time, so I think they hang up like a 30% number. But my read from just being outside, now the weather's been this week, I'm anticipating cooler temperatures but dry.
Very good. All right. What else? Finish them up.
Yeah, the Fleur-de-Lis, race seven, so the middle leg of the All-Stakes pick five. She's a dually. She's been, you know, this year getting that grade one win in the La Troyenne, but having to give 4 pounds the blue prize in the late, I think is pretty punitive in this spot. So I need to dig a little deeper. I mean, maybe I can plant my flag in only one, but I'm definitely not going to use She's a Dually given 4 pounds. I think they're too equal to have to give weight, and she's obviously going to be one of the three that takes money. Since I'm singling Mr. Money, I'll probably just try to skate with the two blue prize and a late in here.
Fair enough.
And the Stephen Foster, you know, I already mentioned, but Runaway Ghost and Thirst for Life, I'd love to get live to, in addition to Seeking the Soul and Tom Stetot. And then the Regret closes us out, and I'm pretty intrigued by Cassie's pairing here. I think both have a right to move forward off some mini layoffs from the spring. You got Leperoux on Hard Legacy and Gaffleone on Belle Laura. I know he was high on Belle Laura in particular. He ran her in the Breeders' Cup, and that was a little deep for this one, but seems to maybe be a new filly, has been closer to the pace in her last two. And maybe that could be good enough here off the mini layoff, race a little more forwardly and get the job done at 8-1 morning line. But Norm's pair is definitely two who I want to be live to when this thing closes out.
Very good. That's it. There's your pick five.
That's it. There's the pick five, yeah. Basically singling Mr. Money, tossing Cheesa Julie and the Florida Lee. He's in the other two and probably spread elsewhere, but the Cassie pair at 8-1 would be a nice way to close.
Very much so. Well, you closed out the Triple Crown season beautifully. Ed, well done. I appreciate it. Enjoy tomorrow night.
Always fun. All right, very good. And I'm heading to West Virginia next week for vacation, so you'll have Scully.
Very good. We haven't had a chance to talk to James, so we'll catch up with him.
Yeah, it's been a while, so that'll be good.
All right. EJXD2, everybody, Ed DeRosa. We'll stay right here because Nick Tamaro standing by, and we've got 13 minutes to the top of the hour to spend with Nick. And the first order of business is to congratulate him on another terrific contest performance, second in the Belmont Betting Challenge. Well done.
Thanks, my friend. Appreciate it. Yeah, good little run. Different kind of contest for me in that I had a good day on Friday, good day on Saturday, second going into Saturday, stayed second. And not often that you finish second behind somebody whose wedding you went to and second in front of somebody who's third that you've had dinner with multiple times. So, yeah, it was a good good leaderboard.
Well, and Blake Jesse, who we feted with Pete Fornital on Wednesday, well done. And I was delighted when I wrote back to you on Saturday night. I said, you know, once we established that you were second, and I said, anybody we know finish first? Yeah, Blake Jesse. So very, very nice. Talk about how you, you know, where you scored and you know, how the ebb and flow was.
Typical of any tournament where I've had success, it was pretty much a number of scores rather than one that kind of stood out. But Friday, my biggest opinion of the day was trying to get alive in the double to Ailish in the last race. So I had a $200 double from Ahmad into Ailish. Actually just played three $200 doubles in that race. Didn't even weight them at all, figuring that I thought Ahmad, Arklow, and Red Knight were about as likely to win. You know, collectively, didn't think that any one horse was more likely than the other two, I should say. And then that got me into second going into Saturday. The plan on Saturday was to try really four different things. One was to beat Rushing Fall, which obviously did not work out, to get alive to the two clever prices that I liked in the Acorn, to fool around with Baracho, depending on how the track was playing, and then to find a way in the Belmont to be as narrow as possible playing Tacitus in the Exacta. So numbers one and two did not happen. Rushing Fall obviously was much too tough. And then I got alive in the double to Queen of Bees and Cookie Dough, both of whom were left in the wake of Guarana. Neither really had much of a chance the way the track was playing and the way that race unfolded and by how good Guarana is. And then obviously the best idea was Baracho, getting Baracho in the money. So I keyed Baracho in the exactas and then played him in some trifectas under the horses that I thought were the main players. And that included Hot Creek Hustle. So ended up with a $5 try with Baracho getting up for third. Had he been second, I would have had a $50 exacta, which I think would have been about a similar return. Had Hot Creek Hustle been disqualified, it would have had a $30 exacta, which would have been almost a $10,000 return. So we were going to cash no matter what. And that that enabled me to play the Manhattan in such a way that ended up with $120 on the try, basically just keying Bricks and Mortar over Robert Bruce and making a play that really wasn't much more than the minimum. And so going into the Belmont, I guess allowing a little bit of game theory into it, I was in second and did not want to lose a ton of position. So Jonathan was in third, and a person, a woman named Kathy Krall, was in fourth. She had been betting the minimums and not much more than that, so or at least as much as we could determine. So my plan was to bet enough money to stay ahead of her, should everything lose, while also having a couple of combinations that would catch Blake, provided Blake didn't make a substantial amount of money. So basically, Tacitus spinoff and spinoff Tacitus were both combinations that would enable me to win the contest, and then Tacitus, Sir Winston, and Sir Winston, Tacitus would be combinations that would be good enough to pretty much firm up second. So that's exactly what happened, and ended up making about $10,000 on the race, and felt going into that, coming out of it, I should say, that it would be good enough to hold on for second. You never know. And really astute players on the win end like Tony Zhou and Garrett Skiba and a lot of the really, really good contest players that had money left, you see a 10-to-1 shot that was relatively logical win, and you think, well, man, I mean, this board could get totally turned upside down, and there weren't a whole lot of people who made money. So it worked out well. One of the people who did make money, of course, is my good friend Marshall Graham, who got himself into six and got a trip back to the NHC where he was in the top 10 this year, so hopefully we can see that happen again. And worked out well between finishing second, getting the BCBC, and moving onward.
The way the track played, as you referenced too, and how did you adjust? I don't know if you did. You hear Paul Matisse and his treatise?
I didn't get a chance to listen to the podcast yet. I need to download and listen. What did he say?
He is bias neutral, more or less, and feels it was a little overstated. Obviously, the inside was good, but feels like the dialogue about it may yield plenty of opportunities.
I don't think that's unfair. And I think Paul's a genius when it comes to this stuff. I mean, Paul and his crew do a tremendous amount of work on a daily basis, looking at biases and pasts and things like that. So I will defer to him in this case. However, I think that if we sat down and looked at this particular card, you're going to find a number of examples that are pretty supportive of a very strong rail bias, one of which is, other than the Woody Stevens, the three horses who covered the least amount of ground in every single dirt race finished 1, 2, 3, with the exception of Mopetism. So, I mean, this was a very, very strong inside. And I think being inside on the backstretch into the turn moved you up significantly. I mean, look, and you can explain away performances from outsiders like Jeltran and Strike Silver, who found their way towards the rail and completely outran expectations. I mean, the Acorn, if you look at the head-on, it's their single file along the inside, the eventual 1, 2, 3 finishers. Now, I understand Guarana and Serengeti Empress were the two favorites, so it's not altogether shocking that this happened, but look at how everybody on the outside just completely swam for the final half mile. Look at Firenze Fire, who was completely loaded at the quarter pole and with a 3-to-4 wide trip was totally ineffective down the stretch. You know, it's an unbelievable performance from Tacitus to lose the kind of ground that he did and still be there while Sir Winston got that dream run up the rail that somehow enabled Jovia to become a Belmont Stakes placed horse. So, you know, I mean, Paul and I could probably have a long conversation dissecting a lot of trips on this card, but it felt to me like the rail moved up a number of horses. And yes, the outlier was Hot Creek Hustle. Hot Creek Hustle spent the majority of the time outside. However, I will say, watch the first quarter mile on the head-on in that race, and Hot Creek Hustle and Nitrous are both inside. Baracho was as close to the inside as Jose Lascano could get him before he had to go outside. There was a big advantage down the backstretch and into the turn to being on the rail on that card, in my opinion, and it's going to take a lot of concrete examples that I've not seen in watching a lot of replays to unconvince me.
Fair enough. That's why we offer these opinions, and that's what makes it valuable to keep tabs and keep copious notes. No matter what, there will be money making opportunities that emerge out of these races.
No doubt. And, well, and the other thing I would add to it, Steve, also is that, you know, we talk about trips all the time, and we talk, and Paul is a guy who's great at this, will talk about how, you know, they don't want the trip that everybody else will see. Right, they don't want the horse that was steadied hard on the inside that everybody and their brother is going to bet back. So, you know, sharp handicappers, sharp players are going to look for days where there might have been a bias that nobody really noticed, you know, or that maybe was a little more understated than one that really sticks out. And so when it feels like everybody has jumped on the bandwagon, you want to say, okay, well, let me look at this as critically as possible, and let me really see if horses were affected and, you know, how they were affected and how the bias may have come into play in the way races unfolded, because, I mean, again, it's really about how races are run, much more so than it is how races are won. We've adopted a collectively in racing, there's been sort of a gravitation towards simply being overly results-oriented. And, oh, this one's better because he wins, and this one won, and no, that one won, so he can't possibly be better if he ran second because the other one won. That's insanity. You want to find excuses for why horses may have lost or why they may have run against the grain of a race, against the grain of a surface, and all of those things in your handicapping, and let that factor into your wagering, because if you're doing that and you're looking at it critically, it's going to make you better.
Absolutely. Well, anything else from the weekend that stood out?
Yeah, I mean, it was the Guarana and Honest Mischief were horses that I expected to both run well. I think Honest Mischief was affected by having been moved outside, and not to dump on them, but there were a number of really high-profile riders in that colony that seemed to have no idea that there was an advantage towards being inside, and there was one that did. And if you watch what Joel Rosario did on Lexingtonian and the Woody Stevens, and then obviously on Sir Winston, he got both of those horses to the inside as quickly as he could. He saved as much ground as he could, and he obviously let them ride the good part of the surface. This was a memo that a lot of good riders did not get and put themselves in bad positions. But I guess a part of me was rooting against both of those horses, because I kind of wanted to, I'd like the horses to still go through like smaller stakes races or allowance conditions before they're vaulted immediately into grade one company. But obviously both are very talented, and I would imagine Guarana will be one of the major players in the three-year-old filly division going to Saratoga, because you can see her stretching out without an issue given her running style and that damn side pedigree. It was but yeah, I mean, the Belmont itself wrapped up what was undoubtedly a strange Triple Crown season, and it's nice to see Mark Cassie get a couple of wins in it, because he had horses that he stayed the course with, and that's kind of Mark Cassie's Barnes MO, I think, which is that they run their horses in big spots. They very infrequently, if ever, turn down a big dance. And Sir Winston is a horse that obviously needed to be gradually progressed forward, and getting him to a place like Belmont, getting a rider like Rosario on him, given his profile, obviously helped quite a bit. So I think it was it's interesting, because we're at a point this year where I think you'd get a number of different answers if you were asked who the best three-year-old is, best active three-year-old, best injured, you know, which could it be? It's a little unknown at this point, and we'll see who comes back in the next 3 to 4 months. But all roads seem to lead to a Travers that might that hopefully will provide us something conclusive. And at least we also know at this point that there probably isn't a Bob Baffert horse like West Coast or Arrogate waiting out there to clean up on the competition at Saratoga, and it might just have to be a good old-fashioned slugfest.
That's where it's shaping up. And Sunday we'll get our first read back on Maximum Security in the Pegasus. They rounded up five to face him, including King for a Day, who won the Sir Barton and won it well. King for a Day in their direct order service, adding a second horse so that make the race go. But they did get six. Fletcher has a second one too. No Judgment doesn't have a rider, so maybe. Maybe that was also a horse designed to make it go. So I don't know. We'll see. Six listed. We'll see if six go postward. Let's go to tomorrow's action. And I'm sure you've got something interesting for us. What did you look at?
Yeah, I figured we could talk about the cross-country pick five. Why not?
Cool.
It's been the elusive bet so far of the spring now into the summer, winter, spring, and summer. And it's a good little slate now that we've got some turf racing that we can sprinkle in. There's one from Delaware, one from Monmouth, two from Belmont, or is it two from Monmouth? I think two from Monmouth, two from Belmont, one from... Oh, no, I'm sorry, there's a Woodbine.
No, it's one and one. Yeah, it's the 8th, 7th, 8th, 9th from Belmont.
Two, yeah, exactly.
Yes, one Delaware, the two stakes.
I'm tremendously skilled at confusing myself, which obviously was evidence there. But the two Belmont races, not necessarily going in sequence, but the two Belmont races, the first of which is a one other than allowance, has, I would say, The interesting horse in it is Opry, coming back off the layoff. I don't really know if Opry is good enough to win this race, but this is a horse that won the With Anticipation and really, really fine style and came back with a bit of a dull effort in the Pilgrim. I think everyone was disappointed. He then was sort of thrown to the wolves in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, and I don't say that because he shouldn't have been there. He absolutely belonged there. He was just sort of given this ridiculous ride where he got close to a strong pace and didn't finish at all. Now comes back off the layoff for Todd Pletcher, who's done very well with layoff returnees, especially over the last couple of years. And you're looking at a race where the favorite is going to be a Chad Brown horse that he more or less gave up on three starts ago and now is trying to determine whether he really is allowance caliber. He returns off a layoff himself. Obviously, the second place finish to Clyde's Image looks quite a bit better, given what Clyde's Image has done so far this year, and he'll look for a graded stake win on Sunday in the poker. Prognostication is a deserving favorite, but does come back off the bench, and you've got a couple of horses in here that are in a pretty decent form, Hobo included, who just narrowly missed to another Chad Brown trainee last time on Leveraged. And then as far as layoff returnees, you have Morrison, who looks like a controlling speed and will have to be ridden, I think, somewhat aggressively from the outside. So it's a difficult race. It's not one I think that you want to just sort of hand off to prognostication. I think you want to be as critical of him as you possibly can while recognizing that he does have a lot to offer. I think you're going to want to use Extraordinary Jerry and Opry and Morrison, probably Hobo to an extent, in a backup type of role. The feature at Belmont is the Dancing Renee, which has amongst the six starters two siblings in Midnight Disguise and Holiday Disguise. They're from different sires, but same dam, Thin Disguise, who and Linda Rice has done well with both of these fillies. Holiday Disguise, a multiple stake winner, including the Broadway and Critical Eye over this surface, won the Bowery back in May of 17. They seem to have pretty similar running styles and that they both want to come from a little bit off of it. Midnight Disguise, probably a little bit more so than Holiday Disguise. And there's really only one speed horse in the race. So if you think that Leah's Dream is capable of getting away from this field, I know this is a pretty big class test, but this is a horse with a decided pace advantage in a race that the two big favorites are both going to be coming from pretty well out of it. So I don't blame anybody who wants to try and maybe get slightly cute and hope for a Leah's Dream wire job. I think you're going to want to use both Linda Rice trainees on a multi-race play, given that they are the two likeliest winners, provided there's a decent setup. So it at least seems like a race where I think you can get through relatively thin. The Honeybee at Monmouth is 5.5 furlongs on the turf, and there's real speed in there with a bit of both for Jason Service and Eye in the Sky, both horses that have a pretty great deal of early speed. I have generally found these 5.5 furlong turf races at Monmouth to be pretty difficult in terms of determining who's going to make the pace and whether there's a big advantage to being on the front end. I think it's safe to say that sprinting on the grass, there's always an advantage to being somewhat forwardly placed. I would like to think that a bit of both getting to the turf with a little bit of turf pedigree for Jason Service is going to be pretty tough. He's also getting Golconda, who was fourth in the misdirection against the aforementioned Eye in the Sky and didn't really get a ton of pace help that day. This is an interesting horse drawn inside, and if Service decides to run her here, I would give her a pretty long look and some pretty serious consideration, especially given that her stable mate may ensure that there's enough pace for her to make that late run. The Obeah at Delaware is a prep for the Del Cap and looks really like a race that should be dominated on the front end. Good One Honey wired the Serena Song last time and was DQ'd for some interference in the early part of the backstretch. And I was watching the replay last night, watched the head-on as well, and it was definitely a move that affected Forever Liesel, who probably could have run second, if not better. I really don't think anybody was beating Good One Honey that day. So the last thing we need to do is get involved in a conversation about disqualifications and whether somebody was best and whatnot, given what's gone on this spring. But Good One Honey looks long gone pace-wise in this race, and my limited opinions at Delaware on a yearly basis are that speed going long on the dirt is generally something very, very favorable. So I would imagine Good One Honey will be pretty tough. I think in terms of alternatives, you probably want to look at another Broad, who was fourth in the DuPont Distaff last time with no pace set up whatsoever. Time before that did run well in the top flight at at Aqueduct. So I think there's enough there to find a way to include her. And then it closes at Woodbine with, I believe, the eighth race, which is a maiden claimer, and on the turf. And again, this is a situation where I think you want to be as deep as possible. This looks like a very, very difficult race. If I'm clicking on the right race, I think I am. Yeah. So I think you want to have your options open. Those were the main spots I saw along the way, in what looks like a pretty competitive sequence. And again, I bring this up all the time, sort of being an advocate for it, but this bet is great. It's a low takeout bet. It's interesting. It's looks like it's pretty approachable this week, given that there's a couple of solid favorites and some relatively small fields. And it would be great to see the pool on this get a little bit bigger, because these are generally pretty player friendly.
Well, it's been fun to attack. I've hit it a couple of times, and keep going at it. I think we'll be more focused on Churchill tomorrow, just because of time constraint, and I got to head to Connecticut early in the day for lunch.
This is like a little appetizer for the nighttime Churchill action.
Yes, I suppose. I guess I can. I guess I could. Yeah, we'll see. I've got a busy afternoon, and then we're going to Connecticut, and so we'll see. You mentioned the poker, Clyde's Image on Sunday too. Don't want to let that slide by.
Oh, I completely botched this cross country bet. By the way, the eighth at Belmont is the fifth leg, at least according to Aquabase. Leg D is the Belmont eighth race.
There was an email, and I actually printed it out. I thought it was the seventh, eighth, and hold on,
on the website it originally said Woodbine was leg D.
Well, they sent an email out last night, yesterday, I will tell you right away. I'll pull it right up here. Naira Communications, Bedoink. Naira teams up with Monmouth and Delaware for the cross country. It is going in this order. The Delaware, the Obeya is first, the Belmont seventh, the Monmouth 10th, which is the Honeybee, then the Belmont 8th, and the Dancing Renee is the fifth leg.
Right. So the race that I guess that we didn't touch on is the 8th at Belmont, which might have a favorite breaking from the far outside at a mile and 16th on the inner, who's sort of a one-run closer for Jimmy Ferraro. So, I mean, this is going to be a pretty wide-open race that you'll want to have as many alternatives as possible, given that there's just a lot of ways to go. So only spices it up even more.
Well, and then, as we mentioned, Sunday in the poker, Clyde's Image from the rail. Go forward with Castellano, who has ridden him, but not successfully, actually. Hembree shows up in here for the Wyckoffs for Three Diamonds and Maker, although, as it happens, he's cross-entered as well for Laurel on Sunday. Krampus, good old Krampus for Bill Chatine and Bill Mott as well. Gucci Factor for Clement, the High Clare bred New York bred, and Master Mirian, Wesley Ward, who's got bigger things on his mind. Ticonderoga for Chad and Woodford, and Therapist for Christophe Clement, Breaking the Rules for Shug. Dr. Edgar, good old Dr. Edgar, who we tried to get home in the Fort Marcy. So a very nice group for the poker.
Yeah, and I think, the race that Dr. Edgar ran in the Fort Marcy, this is where I think key race conversation sometimes can be a little misleading. But so was the race Dr. Edgar ran in the Fort Marcy bad because Olympico came back and ran poorly, or was it good because Robert Bruce came back and ran poorly, or does it not even really matter because both of those horses were returning off of layoffs? I actually think that it made Dr. Edgar look better because the pace in that race, given the turf condition, was pretty strong. I thought Dr. Edgar ran great. So I'm not sure if a mile on the widener is really the most ideal trip for a sort of a one-way speed type, but Dr. Edgar's a horse I think that really has come into his own, and I'd want to find a way to include him as often as I possibly could. So yeah, it's a good little spot. That race came up strong, and Clyde's Image has run a couple of really brave races against really, really salty competition in his last two, and you'd like to think that he's in just a much more realistic spot this time around. Should get a good trip from just off the pace, but I'm interested to see how it shakes out. These grade two, grade three turf, long turf races between the Wise Dan and the Poker sort of show that there's however much talent you want to determine, but there's an awful lot of depth in that grouping as what I guess there are about 20, 22, 23 horses entered between the two.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Well, Nick, delighted for you. How much money did you take home?
Between the prize and the prize and bankroll, about $64,000.
Not so bad.
All in a couple days' work.
Exactly. Good work.
So I torture
if you can get
myself
it.
And sleep after the contest is over, and spend every waking hour thinking about how to structure trifecta and exacta bets.
Well, time well spent. That's for sure. That's for sure. Good job. Nick Tamaro, everybody. NTAM, 1215. And looking at New York and more this weekend. Let's take a break. Come back with Rick Amerley and Nick Luck on this fun Friday. Beautiful, turning nice and beautiful, breezy, sunny afternoon here in upstate New York, where you're all going to come. Right? You're all coming. At some point or another for Saratoga this summer. Back after this, Rick Amerley.